There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
I closed our borders to certain areas of the world.
Yeah.
I won't be specific because it's not nice to be, specific, but... You understand where.
Mm-hmm.
And I closed the borders to certain areas of the world very early. We'd never closed the border before. We've never done that before.
Right, right.
And flights coming in and people coming in.
Yeah.
Because they had a very early problem. And I closed them. I took a lot of heat from the Democrats. They said, what's he doing? Because anything I do, they'll do the opposite. Mm-hmm.
Okay, obviously, President Trump earlier today talking about response to the coronavirus. Dalton, did you hear... There's somebody in the back. It's a close shot of just the president, but you see there are people flanking the president, and somebody's in there going, I was waiting for it. That's right. As the president was talking about response here stateside to the coronavirus. Hey, y'all, it's Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple of hours, and you're a big part of the show at 343-0106. We're going to check in with what happened in Montgomery this week. State Senator Chris Elliott on the way, Representative Chip Brown on the way. Also, though, the big story there, a couple of them, and it's the market and it's coronavirus all in one. Latest headline here, the World Health Organization raises coronavirus threat assessment to its highest level. Remember when we used to have the terrorism threat levels and it would be green or yellow, orange, red? Remember that? I guess we have the same thing for these threat levels. World Health Organization officials say they are increasing the risk assessment of the coronavirus to very high across the world. World Health Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus said health officials were seeing linked epidemics of COVID-19 in several countries, but most cases can still be traced to known contacts or clusters of cases. Okay. The situation right now is not what they're raising the threat for. They say what it might become. World Health Organization officials today said they're increasing the risk assessment of the coronavirus, which, by the way, are we going corona or are we going COVID? Screw corona for right now. Increasing the risk assessment of the coronavirus, which has spread to at least 49 countries in a matter of weeks, to very high at a global level. Quote here from Dr. Mike Ryan, executive director with World Health Organization, said we are on the highest level of alert or the highest level of risk assessment in terms of speed and in terms of impact. They said this is a reality check for every government on the planet. Wake up, get ready. The virus may be on its way, and you need to be ready. You have a duty to your citizens. You have a duty to the world to be ready. They said the world can still avoid the worst of it. That's a quote here. But the increased risk assessment means the World Health Organization's level of concern is at its highest level. Okay, so there's that. And by the way, outside of China, as of today, 4,351 cases over 48 countries. I mean, which is not. I mean, there's you split that 4,351 cases across 48 countries. We're not looking at a bunch of people right now, right? But it's the question of how it spreads going forward. Now, what are the markets doing? The markets are once again taking a bath on this. Which, by the way, I'm looking at this. I told Dalton this morning, I'm just going to follow this, and it's going to get to a certain point where folks like me will then start buying, right? We get back into the market. I mean, obviously, the fundamentals of most companies will not change based on a virus, right? It's fear in the short term that drives this, which will end up making some good bargains out there. Like Apple stock, you see Apple stock down like 7% or so. There'll be some bargains out there. Okay, so... What are we looking at right now? Well, it's just like it's been this week. It's down, down, down across the board here. Dow's down 1.88%, S&P down 1.26%, NASDAQ 0.44%, Global Dow down 5.4%. That's significant. Oil down 4.71%. And get ready, gold is down 3.53%. Now, you may ask, what the expletive? I'm with you, right? Oil's down and gold's down and the markets are down. Now, why would gold be down? Usually that is a contrary, right, to what the market does. So at least one theory floating around out here, this story from MarketWatch. It said, on down in the story, likely adding pressure on gold prices. Physical transaction in China and India are typically conducted face-to-face, and we anticipate these transactions are going to plummet as the coronavirus plays out. And that is Vice President of Precious Metals at Zahner Metals, adding these two countries account for about 1,000 metric tons of demand annually. Okay, so they're saying maybe just the fact that, I guess, people won't trade in gold. It's very strange. It's one of these things that really stood out to me, because when everything else goes down, then precious metals go up, right? If you've watched this ever. But it says precious metal in the story. It said precious metal usually finds support in as a drop in the stock market tends to lift the haven appeal of gold. And they said at this time around, however, given the steep stock market declines, gold has become the asset of choice among investors to generate cash. Said investors are selling anything with a bid and running for cover. That includes typical hedges like gold. So we're flooding the market, I guess, right now with gold. They said we saw similar behavior in the 2008 financial crisis. However, once investors understood and appreciated the scope of central bank stimulus coming down the pike, they began buying gold. The price more than doubled back then from the lows. As of today, the most active April gold futures contract is down 3.62%. Traded at $1,585 an ounce, down $56.70 or 3.5% during the session. So this is it's kind of contrary to what you think would happen, right? You would think gold be going up. It may, just not today. Just not today. So across the board, very strange. You see, markets are down, oil prices are down, and gold is down. So it just stood out to me as something that was different going on today. So just watching this, of course, you have the WHO and Wall Street in the same news story, and we probably will going forward. But I think we as Americans got to ask ourselves, number one, is this going to change much in the American consumer's world? If you're like China and people wouldn't get out and wouldn't trade face to face and all that kind of stuff, then fine. But where we are stateside, is the American consumer going away? I don't think so. Have these companies changed what they do to make money? I don't think so. So it is it's an odd thing to look at here with the markets dropping and gold dropping, and maybe eventually there'll be a bottom here and some profit to be made. Dan, good for you. Dan said, I'm up 43.45% today. Got to buy those puts, baby. It's all about the puts, isn't it, Dan? I'm going to be halfway doing Midday Mobile, halfway doing some trading as we roll through the next couple hours. Glad you're here. Coming back, State Senator Chris Elliott joins us, and talk to him about this week in Montgomery as we roll on a Friday, a beautiful Friday here in Mobile and Baldwin counties.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Dan, you don't need to show off, okay? I trust you. I trust you. Dan's sending screenshots. He's got his... He's up 43.45% today. When you're a contrarian, like obviously Dan is, and y'all know I am, these are interesting days in the market when it's doing things like this. But he's sending me screenshots of how he's, yes, you're killing it today, Dan. You're killing it. And as soon as I'm not doing other things, I want to be still don't think we're at the bottom. I don't think the value Big Lots shopper of stock, Sean Sullivan, is at his point yet. But I'm looking. I see this as opportunity. Metrics haven't changed. But it is a weird thing to look at the indices. Oh, I'm sorry. We don't say indices anymore, by the way. It's indexes. I was trained to say indices my whole life. Now we're saying indexes. So you look at the indexes out there. And the markets, you look at the Dow, look at the S&P, they're down. And then you look at oil, it's down. That makes sense, right? Those kind of go together. And then gold's down, too. And that's when I go, I thought I knew something. I know nothing. All right. Let's talk about what's happened this last week in Montgomery. I know a lot of us were busy thinking about Mardi Gras here in South Alabama, but they were in session in Montgomery. And joining us to talk more about that, State Senator Chris Elliott. Hey, Ben.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. While we were partying down here, y'all were in a fat session in Montgomery.
We were, and it was a very different mood. I can promise you that.
Not nearly as festive.
It just really wasn't. It was kind of depressing. I made sure I had some Rebirth brass band playing in my office.
Cool.
But, trying to set the mood, but it didn't work.
But a lot of things did come out of session this week, and I want to talk about, first of all, let's go something you've talked about with us several times on the show, Senate Bill 142. That is, I call it the police jurisdiction bill, but you have another name. You have like an official name for it.
It's called the No Taxation Without Representation Act.
Okay, there you go. Well, that's kind of catchy in this republic. Tell us what SB 142 proposes.
So what it does is it essentially eliminates police jurisdictions and extraterritorial jurisdictions. It keeps municipalities from enforcing municipal ordinances outside their corporate limits. However, it also puts on the ballot in November a referendum to allow counties that across the state that want to keep their police jurisdictions, however crazy that may be, to do so if they want to. But it lets people actually vote on whether or not they want to be tax policed and regulated by these city councils that they don't have any right to vote for currently.
You know, it wasn't until when you first discussed this, I think it was last session, we talked about it. And I mean, it's been there in plain sight in front of me all this time, but I hadn't put that together. I mean, as the police jurisdiction discussion gets done in maybe a proxy battle when it comes to, you know, whether cities are going to grow, whether you're going to have people be able to vote to come in the case of Mobile. But you're right. What is true all over the board is people are being taxed and have no right of representation there. It's amazing it hadn't been challenged earlier.
Well, and it has been in the courts. It's just something the legislature has stayed away from. And it's incredibly – well, I say we stayed away from – we stayed away from eliminating it. But it seems like every year we have 6 to 8 different bills that deal with the interaction between counties and cities, who lives where, et cetera. It takes up an inordinate amount of time in the legislature. You have all kinds of local constitutional amendments here and there that deal with this. It's incredibly complicated, and at the end of the day, the public doesn't know who's governing them, right? They don't they don't understand, where do I go get my business license? Why do I have to go get a City of Fairhope business license when I don't live in Fairhope, right? Why do I have to go get a City of Fairhope building permit when I don't live in the City of Fairhope? And I use Fairhope as an example because I'm in Fairhope right now. But this happens across the 462 municipalities in the state. Some of them exercise police jurisdictions and extraterritorial jurisdictions. Some of them don't. Why do I have to comply with subdivision regulations for a city 5 miles away when I live in the county and the county has subdivision regulations? Why is the city council's judgment and what they say better than what the county commission's judgment is and what they say when I don't live in the city or anywhere near it?
Yeah, and you have no right of recourse. If you don't like the decisions they make, there's no you don't get to vote for those council members.
Absolutely right. And that's the point we made in committee this week earlier, and the bill passed out. I think it was one dissenting vote. Senator Coleman Madison from Jefferson County, I sat down with her afterwards. We ended up talking about it, and she said, oh, well, you're giving these folks a right to vote. They don't have a right to vote. I'm fine with it now. And at the end of the day, I think that's the response we're going to get from the body as a whole. There are mayors across the state that do not like this because they like being able to tax, police, and regulate folks that can't vote for them. I think that's a mistake. And frankly, I think it's a really untenable situation for mayors and city councils to be in particular, because they're spending city money outside of the city. I mean, I live in the city of Daphne. I wouldn't want them spending that money out in the county somewhere. You charge me city taxes. I have your city revenue. Spend it in the city. Don't go spend it policing somewhere else. And by the way, Daphne does it. But that's the type of thing that I think if folks just had an opportunity to really look at how this works. They'd say, we don't want any part of that.
And you're talking about city by city, how it's different in the state. But let's pull back a second here, too. And so many of us are used to this discussion, police jurisdictions. But Alabama, it's not a majority of the states that do this. This is a rarity.
We're one of three in the whole country that does this. And the reason is they're convoluted. And I really think they go against some of the basic, you know, founding principles of this country. I don't want to get all historical on you, but we can start talking about James Otis and the Stamp Act and 1765 and go all the way back to there where we were talking about no taxation without representation. And that's exactly what you have going on here. You have taxation, regulation, police powers being executed and enforced by people that simply you have no recourse at the ballot box for. And that is antithetical to who we are and what we are as Americans.
Okay, you feel good about this in the full body. Now let's talk about the other body. Let's talk about how you've got to have done your advanced research on how this can be taken in the House.
Well, so here's the bright, you know, the bright light, and that is that on Thursday, the Senate passed a House bill by Representative Sells that prohibited occupational taxes. Okay.
Yep.
So an occupational tax is a tax on where you work, your wages based on where you work, not based on where you live. So I live in Baldwin County, okay? I work at least part of the time in Montgomery, okay, as a state senator. And what it would have done would have taxed those wages, okay? The same thing has been talked about in Mobile before, an occupational tax. Now, the argument is, we have to keep up these city services for you people who don't live here. My argument is, sorry, but we work off of the principle of one person, one vote. We work in a representative form of government where you have an opportunity to elect and vote for the people that get to tax you. And whenever you have somebody that's taxing you can't vote for, you have a problem. Now, I say all of this to tell you that in the conversation and debate about occupational taxes on the Senate floor the other day, on this House bill that had come up to the Senate, what was the discussion? James Otis, the Stamp Act of 17 and 1765. And I was like, yes, you people are singing my song. This is great. Because this is an issue that is starting to pervade, and we're looking at it from a number of different angles where you have municipalities that are overexerting and overexercising their authority, and it's time to get things back on the right side of the ledger. City people should pay city taxes. County people should pay county taxes. And the regulations ought to go along with the elected body that governs them.
So, I mean, for two reasons. Number one, you said they were using the same argument you're making, but, I mean, you think there's a little bit of, hey, we did y'all right on this bill. You're going to take our Senate bill and do it right in the House?
I think it's better and it's easier to say, listen, this is the same principle. It's the exact same principle as occupational tax. You're trying to tax people that can't vote for the city council that's levying the tax. This is the same thing when you talk about business licenses, business license fees and sales taxes that are asked for in an occupational tax or in a police jurisdiction. It's the same principle, and I think it's very easy to illustrate now that that ground has been plowed, if you will, with the occupational tax debate.
Okay, so you do have a good feeling about this in the House.
I definitely do. That plus, we are allowing still for a referendum. And again, that is something that's really hard to argue with. You know, before we had little towns or little cities in this little spot in this county, and they said, man, this is really working out well for us. Fine, keep it. You know, if your voters say they want to do it, fine, keep it. And that's my attitude. At least we gave people the right to vote on whether or not they wanted this thing to continue. And philosophically, I can be okay with that.
All right, let's talk about local, and we just got a minute here before the break. I hope to hold you over. Where do we go, Mesa? What's the update on that?
Good gracious. I brought it up, got it out of committee, got it up on the floor on Tuesday, which is a pretty big feat this early in the session to get a bill like that up on the floor. And it was the budget isolation resolution was resoundingly defeated, mostly by the members of the TVA caucus that loudly voted down the Gomesa bill. And there's a long, there's a lot more background and story that we can talk about after your break, and we can get into a little bit more detail on that.
Yeah, I want to. Yeah, we'll explain that also. I want to get into a couple of things. I know a list came out as Governor Ivey's saying she's signing off on a series of bills. I think we have House bills and Senate bills in here on prison reform. I kind of want to get your take of the temperature here on where y'all are going or what you think will happen on prison reform.
Absolutely.
All right, coming right back. More with State Senator Chris Elliott. We're talking about legislative session this week. A lot of stuff going on with that, and we'll get more from Chris when we get back. Also, remember, text lines open at 343-0106. And reminder, Super Tuesday, of course you get the coverage on Mobile Mornings. You get this show, Midday Mobile. But I'll be on starting at 7 p.m. as well, going until we're finished on Super Tuesday. So with the latest results coming in, analysis from around the state, all that good stuff, live broadcast from 7 until. Now, because they're going to get up early, I hope they get the results in before midnight. But that's happening here on Tuesday night at FM Talk 106.5. All right, news is next, and we're coming right back.
A Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation with State Senator Chris Elliott about the week that was in Montgomery and what's happened on a couple fronts here. And when we went to the break, I was asking you about Gomesa money. And maybe we need to do a little reset here and explain to people what we're talking about with Gomesa money and what you're asking in the legislature to vote with you to do.
So Gomesa money is derived from offshore oil and gas leases. It goes to the federal government, which then splits it up. Of course, the biggest piece going to the federal government. The second largest piece going to oil producing states. And then the third piece going to coastal political subdivisions of the state. Those are the counties that are on the coastline. So in Mobile and Baldwin County, we're looking at probably $2 to $3 million a year per county that come directly to the county itself. In Alabama, we are looking at about $25 to $27 million a year that goes to the state. And then the federal share is much, much larger. Different states get different amounts. It's a very complicated formula that uses the inverse distance from the wellhead and as compared to the miles of coastline. It's, again, a very complicated formula, but those are the raw numbers. Now, the key is, and I'll make this as brief as possible, that the money that goes to the state is under the governor's control, and it is supposed to be spent for specific purposes. It's supposed to be spent for projects for coastal protection, conservation, coastal restoration, hurricane protection, and infrastructure directly affected by coastal wetland losses, mitigation of damage to fish and wildlife and natural resources. And then it talks about the mitigation of the impact of OCS activities. Those are outer continental shelf activities.
OCS.
That's right, through the funding of onshore infrastructure projects. So those are the restrictions. Now, what I'm trying to do with the legislation is simply say, okay, this is what the feds say you can use the money on, but let's all come to an understanding here that in order to check any of those boxes, it has to be spent in the coastal political subdivisions of the state, in Mobile and Baldwin County, because they don't have an outer continental shelf in Limestone County, which I think we can all agree on.
Right.
And they don't have any impact from offshore drilling activity at all.
Right.
And especially not when we talk about the environmental impact. So this money's heavily environmental. So, you know, I've received assurances from the governor's office time and time again that this governor and this chief of staff, you know, both of whom are from Southwest Alabama, have no intention of spending this money anywhere else. But then I get word, but the governor's office is opposed to my legislation to clarify. So I got, you know, antennas go up, right, Sean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would you be opposed to this? And then, like I said, it got out of committee. I had spent a lot of time talking to my colleagues about this issue, explaining what the limitations were on the uses of the money, got it up on the floor. Of course, we haven't passed the budget yet, so you have to have a budget isolation resolution that passes first, which is just kind of a it allows you to move forward with the bill prior to passing the budget. And it failed spectacularly. And you look at who voted against it, and it was all of our northern folks against it. So, you know, my question and my work to do over the next week is to further educate my colleagues, hopefully, on exactly what these monies can be used for and can't be used, you know, for. And then, again, to probably try to undo some of what's been going on with our good Southwest Alabama governor and our Southwest Alabama chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
Who, unfortunately, I have heard, have been talking to other members of the legislature and to other lobbyists that represent counties and cities and saying, hey, this governor wants to spend this in your district or your county. And that's very troubling for me, very frustrating for me, and something I need to figure out how we can undo. Because at the end of the day, Sean, this is coastal Alabama money. The feds say it's coastal Alabama money to be spent in coastal Alabama. But I get real nervous when you can't even pass a bill that just kind of reaffirms that. And I think that at the end of the day, the likelihood that we're going to see somebody try to come after this is seeming like they want to preserve that option, and that frustrates me.
Okay, it sounds like it's, number one, idealistically wrong. I think we down here we'll talk about that, but just semantically wrong as well. I mean, if the rules are as you explained, it can't be used there. I mean, are they just ignorant?
Well, I certainly would not go so far as to call my colleagues that, especially when I'm trying to get them to vote.
Okay, that's me. That was not State Senator Chris Elliott. That was Sean Sullivan asking. Listen, Governor doesn't talk to me anyway. So
well, that's two of us.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not worried about it. It's not going to get any worse.
Yes, sir.
So I'll put it as me say it's me, but it seems like even the people that would be licking their chops elsewhere in the state. It eventually there could be a lawsuit or something that they wouldn't, the feds are going to step in and say no.
Well, and the problem is that this money is at the discretion of the governor. And I can see the possibility of, and I've heard this through different sources and different bureaucrats, administration folks saying, you know, look, there is a possibility that this money could be used, oh, I don't know, up a river somewhere where there may be some other impact that we could alleviate somehow or another. And that's got me really concerned, right? When we start talking about, maybe they'll use it for marine or coastal impacts in, I don't know, Washington County or further up the river. And, I mean, you know what the state of Alabama looks like with rivers.
Yep.
You know, that's not the path we want to go down. That's specifically what I'm trying to avoid here and specifically the purpose for the bill.
And with these, you mentioned our TVA friends. You're talking about the North Alabama, but there's a specific to mentioning TVA as well. I mean, they've got money that stays. Well, let's explain that. I mean, can we ask for some of that North Alabama money?
Well, see, that's the issue, right? They do get some money. It's just payment in lieu of taxes, essentially, that goes to those districts. Really, interestingly enough, for the legislators to spend and at their discretion. And it doesn't have any of these restrictions. It's not environmental in nature. They can do almost anything they want to with it. They're very protective of it, as you might imagine.
How much of that can we get down here? How much of that can you bring home to 32? How much?
Yeah, very little, if at any, obviously.
Okay.
I mean, that's one of those things that, and that's the point here. Is
yes,
guys,
it's the
y'all
point.
Y'all have your money.
Yes.
That you deal with. We have ours, and let's all, you know, just understand that and move along. But I was really shocked at the pushback immediately on that, and I think it underlines again some of the continued north south divide that we have. I would rather go ahead and pass this bill. Get along with my colleagues from North Alabama and not have to make the argument, oh, maybe some of that TVA money needs to be spent down here because, you know, all those impacts from TVA come down the river and end up in Mobile Bay.
Well, I would argue this if I'm there in the austere body of the Senate, I would say there's a lot better chance of an impact from North Alabama affecting South Alabama the way the water flows than anything here affecting you those 1,000 miles upriver.
The old adage about something running downhill, right?
It is. Maybe that's how you present it to folks. All right. But right now, I mean, for people to be aware, there are people that are actively working against the interests of South Alabama for this money. I mean, is that fair to
and
say?
And unfortunately, I think that's the case. And what I've got to do is I have got to use leverage and carrot and a stick and some threats to try to make sure that we make this this work out between the North and the South here and bury this and move on. Because, frankly, we do have big problems that we need to collaborate on and get through on mental health, prisons, budgets, education bond issues, or transportation problems that are bigger than this. But this is an important local issue, one that is raw after the antics of the last couple of years, and one that we need to get solved so that we can all move on and work cooperatively moving forward.
Hey, can you hold on one more segment here? Got to run to a news breakout because I've got a few more questions, so we're going to get those asked here from the text line as well at 343-0106. Checking on session that just wrapped up yesterday with State Senator Chris Elliott. We're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this beautiful Friday, man. Gorgeous, gorgeous. Couple more days without rain. Knock on wood, thank goodness. Maybe get the rivers down a little bit here before we get into the rain next week. Praying for that river drop because Dr. Bill says Central North Alabama going to get a good bit of rain again next week. So we hopefully get these levels down, get people to where they can get into their homes here for a little while before it starts rising again. All right, to continue our conversation with State Senator Chris Elliott, talking about session this last week. And, you know, we can't go any further in this discussion without talking about lottery. The governor said that they're studying lottery, right? Y'all are going to, there's a study and then they're going to report to you. But there's a lot of people out here, Chris, that say, don't y'all have some idea yet after all these years of talking about lotto? Do we need a study?
No. Steve Klaus has a bill in the House. He is close to getting the votes he needs to get it out of the House. As soon as that happens, I hope they get it on the, you know, they get it on the calendar, Senate, and we vote on it. There is no reason to study this anymore. We need to move on and pass a simple paper lottery. I do not care whether it goes for education or general fund. You and my constituents want to vote on a lottery one way or the other. Let's give them the opportunity to do that and move on.
Okay. Do you feel that way? Give us a kind of vibe of your fellow senators.
The governor's wanting to slow this down, and I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense to me, but an appointment of this study committee, when you hear a study committee, you hear, there went your bill, you know?
That's
a bad thing to hear. So you hear, you know, we're going to study this. That's like a blue ribbon commission. Oh, no, that's not a good thing. So I don't understand why they're wanting to slow this down unless there's some desire to wrap it up in some other form of gaming conversation as a whole. But there is no reason to do that, in my opinion. These are two separate issues. A scratch-off or Powerball-type lottery ticket is different from any type of gaming conversation. Yes, they're both games of chance. But, you know, so is bingo, you know, church bingo. I just don't think these are so inextricably tied together that we have to deal with them at the same time. And I am encouraging, you know, my friends in the House to get that bill out of there. Let's get it voted on, and Steve Klaus's bill, and let's move on.
Yeah, good. Okay, good to hear you say that because it's what it has seemed like to me from the outside, but hearing from you on the inside, this idea that I think that it, lumping the two together, the discussion of the compact, and then a lotto bill, to me, it seemed like that was by design, maybe, but not because it's required, that those things could be discussed separately. And you're saying the same thing.
They absolutely can be and should be discussed separately. Just because somebody wants to have the ability to have Powerball may not mean they want to vote on allowing, you know, blackjack crack or something like that, you know, in casino gambling. Those are two different things, and we should provide the voters an opportunity to look at those separately.
Because I wouldn't pick on the governor's study of this if they said, hey, specifically we're going to study the compact. This is, and it's not a new offer. There's been compacts offered, you know, even before, I guess, back to former Governor Bentley's time or earlier. But we're going to study this compact. But this lotto thing is a separate conversation. It would be refreshing.
That is exactly, you know, that's exactly how I want to proceed. I want to get the lottery thing over with, and if we need to talk about gaming in general more, that's fine. But the lottery's been discussed to death, and it's not complicated. We don't need to make it any more complicated. We need to get it on the ballot for people to vote on.
All right. I saw a story out that Governor Ivey was signing off or giving her approval, maybe not using the right term, on a handful of bills, maybe a big handful of bills that were specific to prison reform. It's not and that's a good learning thing for us, too. It's not just one bill. What do you feel about that? Where do we stand with prison reform? Where are we going here next week or before the end of session?
Well, two things. First of all, I'm glad that there are a number of different bills to deal with this. And it's not some large omnibus, you know, bill that's dealing with all kinds of different prison reforms. This will give the members an opportunity to pick and choose what they're okay with and what they're not okay with. And where they may be okay with increasing vocational training, inside of prisons, but they may not be, okay with a look back on some of the sentencing guidelines, for instance. It allows us to get some of this done without having to do all of it necessarily. Now, having said all of that, everything that's been proposed is fairly benign. And I haven't gotten into the specifics of each bill because they were all just introduced yesterday, or the resolutions associated with them. But on the face, they're pretty benign. There's not anything that's, you know, changing sentencing guidelines dramatically. Some of the guidelines may, you know, the lookbacks on the guidelines may affect a handful of people that, if they had committed the same crime today, would end up with a lesser sentence. There's no massive release of people or anything like that, which would be something that would just be a hard stop for me. And there's no real massive reclassification of offenses that was done a few years ago before I got in the legislature, where they said, oh, this is now a different class of felony than what we had before. I would not have been in favor of that. The problem is that means the balance of this is really going to lay in the governor's hands and what they end up doing with this prison construction program, because I don't think any of these pieces of legislation are going to dramatically reduce the number of incarcerated people in the state of Alabama anytime in the near future. It may reduce it over time, but I am not expecting to see, you know, we pass this bill and 6 months down the road we have 600 to 1,000 less people in prison. That's not going to happen. Okay. That's going to happen over time through the impacts of some of these bills where you have a reduced recidivism rate or something like that.
But it's the way I see it, it's even more nuanced than that. When we talk about the actual build on prisons, two things happening there. Obviously, more space, less overcrowding, but doesn't this long-term save the general fund because the cost of staffing or guarding the prison, fewer corrections officers can watch more people? I mean, I keep hearing that. Is that true?
That is the argument that's being made by the administration. It is not one that I necessarily agree with. I do not think that you're going to see significant reductions in staffing costs or maintenance costs over the entire department just because you built some new prisons.
Okay.
I understand that there are larger maintenance costs with our legacy facilities, but I do not think that the savings generated from new prisons is going to offset the lack of maintenance costs from what may be some mothballed older prisons. And I'll tell you an example. We have significantly fewer people in prison than we did 10 years ago. Over, I think, almost 1,000 less. Yet, the Department of Corrections budget has continued to increase annually. So, fewer prisons, and yet more cost. And I just do not see the amount of savings that are being touted as making up for the debt service payments of these privately constructed prisons.
So, okay, can you demand those numbers? Can we see that?
I think you're seeing the legislature, yes, and we are. We're asking, you know, for those numbers and figures. You know, the problem is the folks you're asking to prepare those numbers and figures are the very folks that are,
good point.
Making up the numbers and figures, if you will, and projections. I think if I had a crystal ball, I would tell you right now that there is no way that this stays, that the Department of Corrections budget stays flat in the coming years. And I think that it is going to end up costing us more over time and not less.
There he is, State Senator Chris Elliott. Thank you for the update, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Thanks again.
Always a pleasure. And coming back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. Yeah, we'll continue to look at the legislative session that was. Also look at more of this coronavirus in the markets and the World Health Organization raising its assessment to the highest level. I guess this is the red level here from WHO. What that all means, we'll talk about it when we get back.